Page four. And I make some further comment and question. I made some comment last week on the question, and it is a very relevant and important question, important in that you have the point coming up that is in respect to verse 3 of 1 Corinthians 11. And then last week, I was trying to find either where in the sheet or my personal notes that there were some things on that very subject, even without the question. All to find out it was in the note and the sheet, page 4 at C. and I didn't, for some reason I was flipping the notes that all of us have. But I don't know why my mind had told me that, you know, whenever I'm teaching, I always have personal notes. And I thought it was in the personal notes. I'm assuming that everyone here has... Ron. Okay. I hope when I return your call, who are you in Jamaica or in Canada? Okay. It's good to see you. I'm sorry it's the death of your mother that brought you here. I wish, other than that, you know, the death of our parents is sad. But I wish it was another occasion that just bring you and the whole family back home permanently. Truly. Okay. Okay. Yes. So the question on the question that was handed to me last week is, in 1 Corinthians 11:3, some translations have the word husband instead of man. Kindly comment on this. I made some comment last week, but I bring your attention to C, even though we don't reach C yet, let us hear somebody read the bottom of the page.
Some versions of the Bible translate the word honor.
Anir.
Anir. Man. And gun. Or guni. Mm-hmm. Woman. In verse 4 and 6 as
if
husband.
If my memory serves me right, the word guni is the same word from which our word gynecologist spring from. If my memory serves me right. Okay, you know, a gynecologist is a doctor who specialize in female issues. Okay? Mm-hmm.
In verse 4 and 6, as husband and wife, giving the false impression.
I should have underlined false, because it is a false impression. Giving the false impression in respect to?
That only husband's head should be uncovered and wife's head covered.
Okay. May I? Wait, what else did I say there? That's 5. Or read the rest.
The Greek word ana and une, that's man and woman, are both gender emphasis.
Okay, so let me make some further comment here now. Are we all there? There are some 5 Greek words that are translated man. 5, in fact, probably there's about 6 words. You have the word anthropos, translated man, but that word means human being. It covers both male and female, anthropos. Our word anthropology comes from that Greek word. You have the word that we have just looked on here, anir. Here is the meaning of the word. A male person, an adult male. Get this, the context, while the word anir is translated husband or man, everybody listening, how do you know which is meant, the context? Whenever if you are reading the text in Greek, or a scholar reading the text would see what the text or the context is talking about. Are we all there? So, almost every lexicon and Greek grammar will tell you up front that because the one word is translated man and husband, it's the context that's going to tell you which is meant. Here is it now. When the context is talking about husband and wife, when the context is talk about man and woman relationship as husband and wife, it may use the word anir to describe the husband and to name the husband. Are we all there? When the context is just talk about male and female, when any Greek person or you were reading in Greek and says that word mean husband, we would be giving a most false and erroneous idea, because the passage in which, our text in which anir will be translated husband must be a passage where the speaker, the writer, is talking about husband and wife far such light. The passage of 1 Corinthians 11, 3, in fact, the entire text in respect to woman's covering from verse 2 right back to verse 16 is not talking about husband and wife. Huh? The word, and here is translated husband, soldier, prophet, and there it means a male prophet, but the word really means a grown, mature male. Another word that is translated man is the word tis, T-I-S. Translated someone, man, a certain man. Another word that is translated man from the Greek is the word teleos. A man, a full age, of ripe age. The text of 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16 is not talking about, in fact, when we get to our lesson sheet, I think that's where I just look down and see. Yes. When we get to our lesson sheet, we'll see something here. As I've said, the text is not emphasizing man-woman relationship. The text is emphasizing gender. Huh? Man or woman? Which man? Husband? No. Any man. Which woman? Wife, no, any woman. We get it? And a lot of times a person will, because they assume you do not know Greek, even though you don't know Greek, you can get a good translation of the Bible. And it will give you the proper rendering of the text. Okay? So don't let anybody fool you. There is no way that the word in this passage of verse 4 and verse 6 can be translated wife. It would be wrong, it would be incorrect, it would be erroneous, it would be doing injustice to the entire passage. Okay? Any question on that? Okay. So we move on if there is no question or comment. We move on. We supposed to pick up okay. I know last week we did B. Let's pick up on part 5 now. Read it aloud. Oh, Brother Will. No, some of you, the reason I, as you all, those who are here, know that usually on Wednesday night I don't use mic. It's because the entire series of this lesson is being tape recorded. And after the series, you can get a cassette. Last night we had one big laugh training. As one of the brother pointed out, that cassette is going out of fashion now. it just came in fashion, a few months ago. And no, technology is really something else. And so in preparing for our gospel meeting and our talk about cassette, the brothers were saying, CD is out. You go Price Mart where they usually sell it at good price, and it seems that Price Mart is not even stocking it again. You see, I was surprised. You see how backward I am. Yes. Anyway, yes, so that's why you say I wear a mic, just for the series. It's being taped, and after the series, I'm going to make sure that it is preserved. In fact, I'm going to make sure I have some say-so and control over that. You can always get, what you all call a little thing? Thumb drive. That's right. So we will get it, as we will get everything up to date. Yes. Anyway, part 5 on page 4.
Verse 3-5. Paul lays down the divine principles upon which divine rules or regulations are based. In verses 4-5, Paul is stating in simple understandable language and details and applications of these divine orders. Mm-hmm. 1 Corinthians 14:37.
I just bring to your memory any time the subject of head covering is discussed, never overlook verse 3. We have spent time on it, but because verse 3 laid down the divine creative reason for everything that comes after verse 3. You see, the business about all what is said after verse 3 is dependent on the principle of headship laid down in verse 3, and the commands, the directive given there, going to be as lasting as the headship stated in verse 3. When the truth in verse 3 is no more relevant and is no more truth, is no more so, then women will not have to be covered, and men will not have to go barehead. They can put on their cap, their felt, or whatever. But as long as, let us hear verse 3 again, quick.
But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, mm-hmm. and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God.
As long as that is so, God's people, men must not be covered, and women are to be covered in worship. Somebody said, Brother Mitchell, it didn't say in worship. It says when praying or prophesying. Well, somewhere down in the lesson, I think either of it in my private note or on the sheet, to show that worship sometimes the word prayer stands for worship in places in the Bible. We'll get to that. Okay? So So Paul lays down the divine principle upon which divine rules or regulation are based. The divine principle is set forth in verse 3. In verse 4 and 5, it is stating in simple, understandable language the detail and the application of these divine order. Throughout the lesson, I keep reminding us of the truth in 1 Corinthians 14:37. Could we hear that again? Throughout the lesson, you will see this passage brought into play for good reason. If any
man think himself to be a prophet or spiritual.
Any man. Not just husband. That's right. If any man think himself to be
a prophet. Or spiritual. Let him acknowledge that the things that I write unto you are the commandments of the Lord.
Are we all there? The things under consideration here is all the things that Paul wrote to the Corinthians. He's reminding them, in case they tend to want to throw it one side, he's reminding them that it is the commandment of the Lord. And those of us who may want to just throw head covering one side, that which the apostle has just stated covers that. He's reminding us that the things that he write are the commandment of the Lord, unless the context or Paul plainly state differently. Verse 4 and 5. Well. Okay. Verse 4.
Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head.
Say that again.
Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head.
Did it says every man? I'm coming. Just something I'm looking up here. Are we all there? What are you saying? Are you there, Brother Mitchell? Yes. Okay, I was just at this mark to share this with you. Page 163 following. This is a commentary written by one of our scholar, Church of Christ, David Lipscomb. Many of you heard about David Lipscomb University in Tennessee, named after him. He's one of the stalwart of the Church of Christ, especially in past when he was alive, helped getting the large church very strong in the southern state. Tennessee is a southern state. And writing on it, He said here, praying and prophesying are two exercises in which the churches engage in the assembly. Listen, all pray or should pray, one leads. Are we all there? All pray or all should pray while one leaves. Because the point may come up, well, women do not pray in church. Well, that means she doesn't worship. Huh? If she's a part of the worship, she prays. No child of God is exempt from any act of worship. There's another passage that will be coming up. Very important passage. Okay. All pray or should pray. One leads. The others pray as sincerely as does the leader. Everybody gets it? When a brother is called upon to lead in prayer and you bow, either making his prayer yours or whispering your own prayer, your prayer is as important as the one being worded up there. And that's why we say amen to prayer. Because a lot of time the person praying say something, it's like the person knows exactly what you want to say to God. And here you have David Lipscomb. This is not a denominational person. The purpose is to show how the woman should appear before God in the assembly, not that she should lead in the service. That it talks about when she pray or what. It doesn't mean she leading in the service. It means she's a part of every act of worship. The man must not have his head covered when he comes before God, either with long hair or with hat veil, clothes and cloth of any kind. This would be a shame to him. Okay. Yes, I just share that with you. We are at verse 4. A? Huh?
5A.
5A. It is what?
Instructive.
To what?
To notice every man
telling us
that the divine directive is not merely for prophets or inspired speakers, but every man everywhere.
Every man, not every husband. You all get it? Because the passage is not relationship emphasis, it is gender emphasis. Every man and so every woman. It does not limit the praying to leading prayer or to silent prayer. You understand? It can be any. Are we all there? Question as we go on. Yes, Sherry.
All right, I just needed to expound some more on what is what is the implication of shame? When the Bible say it is a shame, what, how far or what, you know?
Yeah, I get your
That is one question. And verse 4, it says, every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody was to make something of it, like dishonors his head and not Christ, is there Greek to support? Is there two different Greek words or so?
Read the passage again.
Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head. So I'm saying, is there a Greek translation that can show that it's two different heads?
No, well, the context... Okay, when we take verse 3, that verse places a lot of what is said below in context. Verse 3, the head of every man is Christ. The head of Christ is God. The head of the woman is the man. So when it talks about head here, it is using the word head in a metaphorical way. It's not talk about this. It's authority. That's the idea, because that's what it is. It's really authority. And verse 3 set the stage, the head off. So what verse you have just read, Sister Renice? 4. Verse 4 would naturally telling us that when it says every man praying or prophesying with his head covered dishonoreth his head. If the question is asked, what head? Verse 3. Christ. And I think somewhere in the lesson, I'll be dealing more with the word dishonor, but, and even the word shame. But among the things that we men do if we cover our head, it is to show total disrespect, disregard to God's law. And it means our worship would not be accepted. I get a little into something that I don't want to get into yet, probably. I don't know if it's now or next, probably next week. When in the book of Leviticus chapter 10 and verse 3, Moses remind Aaron in respect to what God said, I will be sanctified in them. That means anyone who comes close to me, near me. You know, among other things that we are getting there, in worshiping God, you come close to God. But here is the pivotal point. You cannot worship God or come close to God just any and any way. That's why Nadab and Abihu were killed. Watch here now. Whenever we do our thing in worship, we do not set God aside. That's what the word sanctify means. It's the same word holy. Everybody, you know? The word sanctify is the word holy. To set something apart. In this case, as special. And that's the concept in Leviticus chapter 10. We do not just come to God. You go to some church, even man-made churches, and worship is called to order. Even though they are off, they will tell their audience, we are going to worship God now. That means you can't just any and anything. Now, they are wrong, but the concept is biblical. And when the Almighty God spoke to Aaron through Moses, when God had him just kill Nadab and Abihu, and it surrounds what? Worship. Just kill them. Fear was in everybody. Moses called his brother and said, this is what God meant, that we must put him, set him aside as special. Don't dare come near God just any and any way. In other words, you cannot do your own thing and worship God at the same time. A passage which bears this out too is the passage of, is it 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 11, 12? Anybody? 1 Peter chapter 4, verse, let me make sure. Very important.
If any man speak.
Yes, that's the passage. Listen to this passage. If any man speak.
Let him speak as the oracles of God.
Watch here now. If any man speak. If you are going to stand up and claim you are speaking for God, you have a message from God's book and whatever, make sure you are declaring what God says. That's what the word oracle. The word oracle means declaration, that which God declared. But watch it, read that.
If any man minister,
mm-hmm.
let him do it as of the ability which God giveth.
Now, what coming now is really why I come to this passage. Listen what coming now.
That God in all things may be glorified
through Jesus Christ. You get the idea? Only when we speak as the oracle of God is God glorified. When I or any preacher step on that pulpit and tell our one thing, our one story, and thing have nothing to do with God, God is not glorified. Which means we have not worshipped Him. Only when men and women go up and preach and teach the truth is God glorified. And so it is. We cannot be defiant against the head covering issue and glorify God, worship God. It's waste of time. We come in, Brother Gilbert. We may think we worship, but we only go through the motion. I will be set apart in them that come nigh me, meaning, you cannot worship God doing your own thing. That's it, Brother Gilbert.
Yeah, in Leviticus chapter 10, where they use the fire.
Again, remember, all the comments made during the series going to be in the lesson on the CD. We want to get everything. Read. Yes, say.
What is striking with the Bible is that God always communicates with man with some kind of symbol, some kind of thing.
That's right.
You know, like, so for example, you have the blood go on the door. You have the water.
You have the brazen serpent.
You have the brazen serpent. Somebody could just say, oh, that's just a thing. I mean, that's nothing. That's just a custom to use the serpent. And the same way with the fire, they probably reason and say, well, it's just fire.
Yes. You can't everybody become, gets it? What we have just seen in Leviticus chapter 10 is that Nabal and Abihu were burned up simply because they took the fire from the wrong place. Huh? God designated as what type of fire? Strange fire. And the Almighty God killed them. That's what Brother Gilbert is referring to. But Brother Gilbert is right. You and I, probably, I know, probably I would likely make the same mistake. All fire is same fire. Huh? That's the way we reason. Go on, Brother.
The gentleman who touched the ark to try to save it. So God always communicate with to us with different symbols or physical things. We might take it for granted and say, okay, because it's just a thing or so, it's not important. But it's important when God put an importance or a value to it.
Brother Gilbert, whenever people use that term, I always ask the question, not important to who?
Mm-hmm.
When we say, but that's not important to you or to God. Because if God says it, it means that it is important
to him.
Him.
And then with the passage of time now, when certain things are being disregarded over a period of time, people might feel, oh, that's not really important. If you're not covering for, say, 5 or 10 or 15 years and it become accepted, how do we know now that we know that God not going to change his mind? He already has written
right.
it.
That's right.
So it's for us now to accept it. It's better to err. Oops, I put it then. Yeah. Don't omit what God says
that's right.
to be
and
done.
Brother Gilbert, right on that point, where we see we have gotten off track.
Yes.
Because that's what happened in Ezra's time. Where we see we have gotten off track and learn, we need to get back on track as early
as possible.
Brother Gilbert, a while ago when you talk about Uzziah who touched the ark, the theme for our this year tent meeting is taken from that whole incident, because the theme of this tent meeting coming up in a few weeks' time is God's due order. May I? Many of you are well aware that when the cart probably run over some stone and rough road and the ark and in the cart or the dray stumble, and Uzzah did what I would do. The ark was sacred to Israel. And when he saw it stumble, he put his hand to stabilize the thing. I would have done the same thing, and God would kill me the same way. That's right. But watch here. There is a very rich and important lesson in that text. It's found in the book of First Chronicles chapter. It's really chapter 12 where Uzziah was killed, if my memory serves me right. Quick for me. Really chapter 12. Am I right? Or 13? First Chronicles.
First Chronicles 10.
No, it's chapter 13 from verse 9. Quick.
And when they came unto the threshing floor of Chidon, Uzzah put forth his hand to hold the ark, for the oxen stumbled.
What an innocent act. Huh? Read on.
And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, And he smote him because he put his hand to the ark. And then he died before God.
And there he died before God. You see how innocent the ark is? Remember, we are told that whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our. Now, it is now chapter 15 and verse 13. That's where the theme of our gospel meeting is taken from. And I want to show you something. Read that passage for me. I want to show you something.
For because ye did it not at the first, the Lord our God.
I think it's David now speaking.
The Lord our God made a breach unto us, for that we sought him not after the due order.
What a profound statement. Watch here. Look now. Read again. And brothers and sisters, watch this now. Read again.
Start from verse 13.
That's the only verse I want you to read.
For because he did it not at the first, the Lord our God made a breach unto us.
May I? Because we did it not at the first. You see what I see? When you not do something right, you not do it at all. Did they attempt to move the ark? Yes. They did it contrary to the dictates that God had laid down in the book of Leviticus. The Ark of the Covenant should never be carried on any cart. It's the Kohites, the Levite, should carry it on their shoulder. So, because we did it not at first, but you did it, you did it wrongly. Well, David would turn and say, that's exactly why we didn't do it. Because when you do it wrongly, you don't do it at all. And verse 30, because we did it at first. When you do it wrongly, when we worship contrary to God's dictate, when we come in worship and I have my felt at hand, I am showing all the disrespect to Jesus Christ, my head. And I'm not only doing that, I am overthrowing everything that verse 3 teaches. I am telling God, this don't mean nothing to me, God. Everything. So, Cheryl, remember your point. The point is, when you talk about dishonor head, we are showing disregard, disrespect to our head, Jesus Christ. The woman is only showing, because, you know, is she dishonor her head. Who is our head? Man. Not just her husband. Man has the priority in God's business. Men and women have their function in God's business. But God has given man the priority. The covering is a symbol in which the woman is saying to the angel, to God, to all the world, I have accepted God's dictate for my life. I'm submitting to it. When the man or the woman goes against what the passage says, that person is a rebel. The person is rebelling against God.
Brother Mitchell.
Yes, Brother Gil.
God always, in this passage, he gives a reason, so to speak, for the head covering. Does God always give reasons for the commandments that he gives?
No. Very good question. Are we all here? Very important. God does not always give reason. And what we need to do is always try to make sure we understand what his dictates or commands are.
That's right.
But me no know why God tell me to do this. Do you know what he tells you to do?
Just do it.
That is enough. Once you know what he asks, be done. He doesn't have to give reason. Thank God in so many areas he gives
does.
The reason.
Yeah.
In the subject we are on now, God gives the reason.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God, but in many cases he does not.
Because why I ask that question, Brother Michel, is that if he did not give any reason, we still would have to do it.
Perfect,
but more
brother.
So, perfect. He has given reasons.
Perfect. So we are blessed in that God is stating the reason.
Mm-hmm.
And when we know the reason, we can submit to it even more because
yes.
God enlighten us more.
Enlighten us, yeah.
You know, thank God, Cheryl.
Just like when a woman has cancer or so and her hair falls off,
mm-hmm.
or she have to cut it because of an operation
whatever.
Or something. If like men in American cold places, they say they grow their hair because of the weather.
Mm-hmm.
How would you look at that in the church?
Okay, may I? One of the things, I should have said this in verse 4, I think. Yes, in verse 4 and 5. The teaching on head covering as given in 1 Corinthians 11, 1 through 16. It deals primarily the attire, the head attire of the man and the woman engage in worship. Are we all there? What she does with her hair outside of worship, what the man does with his hair and head is not the emphasis of the passage. Very important. Because sickness can come here, you get medication that affect the hair and lot of things. But what we need to be mindful of is that we have to be careful how we deal with these exceptions that takes us outside of the worship. Because the emphasis of the passage is how a man appear in worship and how the woman appears in worship. In worship.
When he grows his hair, he's coming in worship with it.
Yes.
For whatever reason.
Yes. But in almost any case, or let me be safer, in most cases, the woman's hair going to be longer than his. While you will find a few exceptions where a person might be a dread, we have a brother, he has migrated to Canada. the rule, as a rule, wherever you go in the world, woman's hair is normally longer than man. That's no accident. We can spend some time talking about the exception, and probably during the series of lessons, I may spend some more time. But we must remember that the passage is dealing with how we appear before God. Here is another point. In verse 4, let me hear verse 4 and 5. I'm not going to deal with this because time got. Verse 4 and 5.
Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head. But every woman that prayeth or prophesied with her head uncovered, dishonoreth her head.
May I? I want to just close with this statement. Do you notice the temporary nature of the covering or not covering? I repeat, do you notice the temporary nature? You know, the on and off nature of the covering. Only when praying or prophesying. And it shows that for the man, the covering could never be the ear. You all see? Because he would have to have a haircut every time he worshiped. Truly. The covering is a temporary thing that can be put on and put off. It's only when he prays or prophesies. What about when he's not praying? The man, he can cover. What about the woman when she's not praying? She can take off her veil or hat. All these are things that sometimes we overlook. The passage is showing that the covering is something other than her hair. It's something she can put on when she pray and take off when she's not praying. Okay, we're going to